Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on genetic roulette when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it, and I know it, he said. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalists is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents and our possibilities and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Kind of reminds me of Katie Kirk. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order. The men and families like the Windsors, Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, Vanderbilts. Now, let's wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and to survive this New World Order and global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about 2000, that's Global 2000, Bible Prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. It's the place to start. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about genetic roulette. It's a book written by Jeffrey Smith. Now, he's written two. This genetic roulette's the new one's 2007. And about 2003, three, four, 5 years ago, he wrote a book which is called Seeds of Deception. And in that book, Seeds of Deception, he said, you know, this is an uncontrolled experiment, and you and I are the guinea pigs, and we don't have a clue as to how this thing's going to come out. 4 or 5 years later, he writes a book called Genetic Roulette and says, okay, now I can tell you the answer. Here's how it's coming out. Last time I reported to you, sterile pigs and dead cows. Now, we've taken a look at animal studies, rats and mice, cows and pigs, and I'll show you that some people are being killed by genetic modification that we can identify. Now, you know, it isn't too many yet. You know, we're not killing people, you know, like they're shooting them down or blowing them up in Iraq, but there's some of them, some people are dying from these GM foods. which I guess is no big deal. Some people die every year from vaccinations, and you people go out there and vaccinate your kids every year. We say, well, that's an acceptable risk for the benefits that we derive from vaccination. That's the story that you're told. Vaccinations in this country kill about 100 children a year. Direct vaccinations kill 100 children a year in the United States. Now, for my money, I wouldn't vaccinate a single kid if it was going to kill a single kid. But, you know, children also die from disease. So people look at the cost-benefit relationship here and they say, well, let's see. Children die from disease, and we're going to vaccinate the children to prevent the disease. So the cost-benefit ratio is, well, it's worth 100 children a year to save 1,000, 2,000, 10,000, 100,000 from these diseases. The theory makes all the sense in the world. The practical application is stupid on its face, but, you know, the theory behind it has some reason, logic, and common sense, and so people buy into the program. First of all, vaccinations don't cure, don't prevent any disease. They don't cure and they don't prevent any disease, period. You believe they do, then you're told that they do, but it's a lie. And as old Mark Twain would say, it's a damn lie. And that's because the guys that are promoting it know that it's a lie. You don't, but they do. Now, when we're talking about this GM over here, there are some damn liars in here, but the general overall thrust of genetic modification makes all the sense in the world. It makes all the sense in the world. And the people that are involved in it don't have any particular malign intent. They're not trying to kill you. I don't think the chairman of the board of Monsanto is going home at night, you know, gleefully rubbing his hands together like oil can Harry, saying, ha ha ha, I've killed 50,000 more people today. I don't believe that. Now, that's what he's doing, but he doesn't intend to do that. The scientist, the biologist who's creating this Frankenstein monster, he's just doing his job. The technician who is testing this, the writers and advertising and copy men that are promoting it, they're just doing their jobs. The problem that you and I have is that all of these people working together in concert, just doing their jobs, are killing a bunch of people. And it needs to be stopped. Now, I'm not going to run out here and stop the FDA or start the Department of Agriculture or interfere with Monsanto or do jack diddly squat. All I'm concerned about is me. Just me. I'm not concerned about you. I don't give a rat's you know what about you. I don't care if you live or die. I'm real concerned about little Georgie Gordon living or dying. I'm real concerned about my wife and my kids and my family and my bank account. I don't really care much about yours. That just goes to show you how selfish I am. Now, if you're concerned about you, then maybe you want to get real selfish and pay attention. And Jeffrey Smith's book is a revelation. It's a revelation that says, let me tell you where the bodies are buried over this genetically modified food story. Now, in Europe and in Asia, the governments and the people over there have and are in the process of rejecting GM, and they don't want it. And they're not buying it. And they're rooting it out. And good for them. Here in America and Canada, I suspect in Australia and New Zealand, we don't even know there's a problem. We haven't got a clue. You know, hey, give me another drag off of that reefer, would you? Hey, let's split another line of coke, you know, let's have another party. I don't think the average American really cares. Now, some of us do, and there are a few of us out here that care. So we've taken a look now at the Flavor Saver tomatoes, and we took a look at the potatoes and the BT corn. Let's take a look now at soybeans, because soybeans is a big crop, and it's in more than anything else that we know of. Soybeans are used in mayonnaise. Soybeans are used to produce a number of products that are then used in a number of other products. For instance, soybean oil. So they take soybean oil and they use it in nearly everything. I mean, just look on the package and you'll see it's got soy this or soy that or soybean oil or, you know. And so soybeans are used in I won't say nearly everything that you eat, you know, but in many, many products. And about 80% of the soybean crop is GM. Now, if it says organic on the package, and it's got soybean oil or soybean lecithin or whatever, that's okay, because there are a number of companies that are working very hard, very diligently, to keep GM out. And if you go into the health food store, you'll have products that say GM free. There's no GM in this product. Or if it says organic, there's no GM in that product. So that's why for people like us, we're looking for organic or GM free. Now, if you see soybean anything in a product that does not say organic, or if it does not say GM free, you can just about bet that that's a genetically modified product and you ought to avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. At least I do. I ought to avoid it. I can't tell you what you ought to do, but if you ask me, that's what I'd tell you. All right, now, this soybean over here, and the neat part of this book and the way it's written is that on the left-hand page, it's got the headlines, and on the right-hand page, it's got the story. And the whole book is written like that. So if you're looking for a quick synopsis of the story, let me give you the headlines, and then we'll come back and we'll pick up a story, and then I'll give you the details. Mice-fed Roundup-ready soy had liver cell problems. The headlines are, the liver cells of mice-fed Roundup-ready soybean showed significant changes. Two, irregularly shaped nuclei and nucleoli, N-U-C-L-E-O-L-I, nucleoli, I guess that is. An increased number of nuclear pores and other changes all suggest higher metabolism and altered patterns of gene expression. Three, the changes may be in response to a toxin. Four, most of the effects disappeared when GM soy was removed from the diet. Now that tells you quite a bit right there, just the headlines. You feed these rats and mice GM food, we get these problems, we take the GM away from them, and the problems go away. Okay, so that tells us that part of the story. That's the headlines. And then there's a story over here. I'm going to skip over to the next headline. Mice fed Roundup Ready soy had problems with the pancreas. Mice fed GM soy showed changes in the synthesis and processing of digestive enzymes. The production of alpha amylase, a major digestive enzyme, dropped by as much as 77%. Three, this combined with other pancreatic changes suggests that GM soy may interfere with digestion and assimilation as well as alter gene expression. Okay, let's take this animal study over here, because the purpose for animal studies is to watch what happens in animals, and then we extrapolate that and say, well, gee, if that's happening in animals, it could happen in humans, and it probably does. So what if I said humans fed GM soy showed changes in the synthesis and processing of digestive enzymes, and the production of alpha amylase, a major digestive enzyme, dropped by as much as 77% in humans. And three, this combined with other pancreatic changes suggests that GM soy may interfere with digestion and assimilation as well as alter gene expression in humans. Now, that isn't what the headline says. It says it does that in mice, but I'm sitting here saying, well, my God, if you feed that to pigs and they become sterile, wouldn't we then next ask the question, well, gee, if we fed that to monkeys, would they become sterile? If we fed that to humans, would they become sterile? You know, that's the purpose for animal studies, isn't it? Now, as soon as you feed this stuff and you find that you have these problems in the animals, would you then say, well, there's no empirical evidence that it causes it in humans, so let's go ahead and put it in our corn chips. Let's just go ahead and feed it to humans. You know, anybody in his right mind would say, oh my God, if this is what it's doing to rats and mice and monkeys and pigs and cows, the last thing we want to do is feed this to humans. But that isn't the way the game's being played, kids. And so they're out here feeding it to humans. Last program I pointed out to you, they had some contaminated corn that caused sterility in pigs, caused a pig farmer to go upside down. He went bankrupt, and they foreclosed on him, and they took his corn, the BT corn, the toxic corn that was causing the bankruptcy to start with. They foreclosed, took it over to Cargill, and turned it into human food and put it in the food chain, fed it to humans. Now, it's made this guy's pig sterile, and so, gee, what are we going to do with all this corn? Well, let's put it into the corn ships and sell it to people. Oh, for God's sake, you know. Have we taken leave of our senses in this country? Have we gone just stark, raving, ballistic mad? I don't know who in hell came up with that idea, but somebody did. And, of course, at the time, made all the sense in the world. Because, you know, here's a guy who's got, I'll say he's got 10,000 bushels of corn. And this corn is mortgaged. And I loaned him, you know, let's say I loaned him $50,000 on this corn. Now, we find this corn over here is contaminated, and it's killing his pigs. And because it's killed so many of his pigs, he can no longer sell his pigs and get enough money to pay me the $50,000 that he owes me. And I've got this corn as collateral. And so now what am I going to do? Well, I don't want to lose $50,000 over this guy's BT corn problem. So I foreclose on him, and I take the corn. Now, I've got this toxic corn, and I say to myself, what am I going to do with this corn? It's poison, and it caused old Bob over here to go bankrupt, and that's why old Bob can't pay me. Well, I know what I'll do with the corn. I'll take the corn, load it in trucks, and take it down to ConAgra. I'll just sell it to him. And then they'll just put it in the elevator, and then somebody, you know, will want to buy this corn, and then ConAgra will just sell them the corn. They'll take it and grind it up and put it in the tortillas and the corn chips, and I'll get my $50,000. That's all I care about. That's all I'm concerned with. The people at ConAgra, they're just buying corn. They don't know that this corn has been the subject matter of tests that show that it's got this toxic mold and that it causes sterility in pigs. Is it going to cause sterility in humans? Hell, we don't know. And we don't even want to find out. We're not going to take this stuff out here and find out, oh my God, it causes sterility in pigs, and we've tested it, therefore we want to take it out of the food supply. Somebody's got to take this $50,000 loss. Bottom line, somebody is going to take the loss. And so they just keep passing it up the food chain or down the food chain until you, the consuming public, takes the loss. It could be in the form of sterility, it could be in the form of death, it could be in the form of a hospital bill, you know, allergies or whatever it might be. Now, there isn't anybody here in the chain of events, you know, that's particularly malign or is particularly evil or wicked. It's just that the combination of all of these facts and factors and just the natural processes and so on, all working together, causes this ultimate outcome. Now, next headline, mice fed Roundup Ready soy had unexplained changes in their testicular cells. Okay, well, we found this out with the BT corn that it causes sterility in pigs, and now we find out that testicular, you know, that's your testicles, that's your reproductive organs in males, children. And when we feed this GM soy to mice, it causes changes in their testicles. If you feed this to your little boy, your little male children, ladies and gentlemen, is it going to do the same thing in your little boys? Don't you think that maybe if it does it in mice, we ought not to be testing it on your children until we get absolute corroboration that it is harmless, or that it, better yet, is beneficial to your child? The structure and gene expression pattern of the testicle cells of mice fed Roundup Ready soybeans changed significantly. 2. The cause for the change is unknown, but the testicles are sensitive indicators of toxins. 3. Some of the changes might possibly influence adult fertility as well as the health of the offspring. And 4, mouse embryos from GM-fed mothers did show a temporary decrease in gene expression. Next headline. Roundup Ready soy changed cell metabolism in rabbit organs. Rabbits fed GM soy for about 40 days showed significant differences in the amounts of certain enzymes in their kidneys, hearts, and livers. A rise in LDH1 levels in all three organs suggests an increase in cellular metabolism, and 3, changes in other enzymes point to other alterations in the organs. What kind of changes in the organs? Well, gee, don't you think we ought to find out more before we feed it to our children? I mean, I'm all for GM food. If this stuff is more healthy, more nutritious, cheaper to produce, benefits everybody, and there's a cost-benefit ratio, and the balance is in favor of GM, God, let's get after it. But on the other hand, if it's producing these kinds of problems that we're reporting to you, don't you think we ought to get more information? Maybe we might even have to abandon the technology. God forbid that we would have to abandon the technology, but, you know, we had to abandon thalidomide in pregnant women because it caused birth defects. I know, it's terrible, we really don't want to do it. You know, we might have to abandon heroin, we might have to abandon cocaine, we might have to abandon smoking dope. But, you know, it's one of the hazards of life, you know. Humanity as a whole has abandoned taking arsenic as a food additive or a supplement because arsenic is a deadly poison that kills people. I don't know. Hell, maybe it tastes real good. But, you know, there's this deadly side effect that comes from arsenic and strychnine and cyanide and so on. And so as a general rule, we humans avoid arsenic, strychnine, and cyanide. Don't you think maybe we ought to avoid, at least until we get more information? I know it's a wild new concept, but mull it over. Most offspring of rats that were fed Roundup Ready soy died within 3 weeks. Oh, wait a minute. Did you get that headline? Here's Roundup Ready soy, and we feed it to rats. And now, up until now, I've read you several headlines. It causes changes in the organs. It causes this and that and another thing that ought to make us real suspicious. Now we find the offspring, that's the babies that come from these rats, die. Female rats were fed Roundup Ready soy starting before conception and continuing through pregnancy and weaning. Of the offspring, 55.6 died within 3 weeks compared to 9% from the GM soy controls. All right. So the normal death rate, if you're just feeding rats, is 9%. So a rat has a litter of 10. We would expect 1 out of 10 to die. All right, that's normal. Now, we feed them the Roundup Ready soy, and we find that 6 out of 10 die. That's 55.6, or 5 die. That's half of them. Well, that ain't too bad. We still have 5 left. Well, you know, ladies, that's kind of like having twins, and one of them dies and the other one lives. You know, we could say, well, you know, one of them survived. I mean, how many of you want to do that trick? You know, most people, when they have a child die, you know, they go into mourning. It's kind of sad. It's not, you know, it's not something that we're really jumping up and down and trying to accomplish, or something that we just really relish and enjoy. So when I take a look at a headline like that, I say, oh my God, if half the rats die, why would we want to feed that to our children? Why would we want to buy a bag of corn chips? Why would we want to buy a product over here that's got GM soy in it and then feed it to our children? That doesn't make any sense to me. The offspring, some pups from the GM-fed mothers were significantly smaller, and both mothers and pups were more aggressive. In a separate study, after a lab began feeding rats a commercial diet containing GM soy, offspring mortality reached 55.3%. When offspring from GM-fed rats were mated together, they were unable to conceive. All right, so it causes sterility. Half of them die. These are the rat studies. And so some guy wakes up and says, oh my God, we got to foreclose on this shipment over here. Let's put it in the food supply and sell it to the humans. Not to read you that story, but there's more headlines. Soy allergies skyrocketed in the UK soon after GM soy was introduced. In a single year, 1999, soy allergies in the United Kingdom jumped from 10 to 15% of the sampled population. So went up 50%. GM soy was imported into the country shortly before 1999. Antibody tests verified that some individuals react differently to GM and non-GM soy varieties, and GM soy also has an increased concentration of a known allergen. Rats fed Roundup Ready canola had heavier livers. The livers of rats fed GM canola were 12% to 16% heavier than those fed non-GM varieties. The liver is a chemical factory and primary detoxifier for the body. Heavier livers may indicate liver disease or inflammation. And if this were caused by oil-soluble toxins, they may be present in canola oil. Now remember, I mentioned that there's all four of these products now produce oil. They take oil out of cottonseed, soy, corn, and canola. And those are the four primary crops that are being genetically engineered. And around 60 to 80% of the total crop grown here in the United States of it's 80% of cotton, 60% of corn, I think it's around 80% of soybeans, and around 60 to 80%, I guess, of canola oil, or canola seed, rapeseed they call it, is GM. Now, fortunately, at this juncture of time, the GM industry has gotten such a black eye that they haven't extended this, you know, to other products. They tried it with potatoes, and it failed. They tried it with tomatoes, and it failed. Now, they have gene-spliced a number of products, alfalfa, for instance, and peas and beans and other things. But they haven't put it out in the marketplace. I mean, they got the technology. They're able to do it. We've done it in the laboratory. And we want to do it in field studies, but we're not doing it because there's so many people that are opposed to it. And I'm one of them. I represent about 12% of the buying public here in the United States. And 12% of the people in America, about 36 million people, say nix to this, and we won't buy it. And we're actively working hard to avoid it. And so the food industry, they take a look at that and they say, well, we don't want to label these products. Because if we label them, then that 36 million people will look on the label and they'll see it says genetically modified GM food and then they won't buy it. So our objective then is to keep it hidden so that they will buy it and not know what they're buying. And so my purpose here is to inform you as to what you're buying, so that you too can join the 36 million of us that avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And then over a period of time, the food manufacturers, like they did in England and Europe, they woke up one day and said, the people over here won't buy our products, so therefore I guess we better stop producing it. And so the message is, people won't buy it, then we don't need to produce it, and so they went back to producing what people would buy. And the reason I'm bringing this to your attention is because it's got some health problems to it. Now listen to this. GMPs generated an allergic type inflammatory response in mice. In advanced tests, not normally part of GM crop evaluations, protein produced by GMPs generated a dangerous immune response in mice. That same protein, when produced naturally in beans, had no effect. The GMPs produced a subtle, hard-to-detect difference in the way sugar molecules attach to the protein, which likely caused the problem. The response in mice suggested that the GMPs could provide inflammatory or allergic reactions in humans. Commercialization of the pea was therefore canceled. This type of subtle but dangerous change in the GM protein would rarely, if ever, be detected in the safety assessments typically used to approve GM crops. And then a GM food supplement killed about 100 people and caused 5,000 to 10,000 to fall sick. An eyewitness reports animals avoid GMOs. When given a choice, several animals avoid eating GM food. In farmer-run tests, cows and pigs repeatedly passed up GM corn. And animals that avoided GM food include cows, pigs, geese, squirrels, elk, deer, raccoons, mice, and rats. I don't know what it is about it, but if you put GM out here in one trough, and then you put ordinary corn in another trough, and then you open the gate and let the cows come in, they all run in, and they run around the troughs over there. And as soon as they smell that GM corn, they leave it and go over to the other troughs, and they'll eat that first. Now, if that all you give them is GM, they'll eat it because they haven't got anything else. But if they've got a choice, they won't eat it. Now, that tells you a lot right there. When you see a pig that won't eat something, that's a pretty good indicator that it isn't fit to eat. If a pig won't eat it, then you ought not to. All right, now we'll talk about these humans here when we come back from the break, and we'll show you that this has already killed some humans. And I would suggest that if maybe the cost-benefit ratio is worth 100 or 200 dead humans, but I kind of doubt that. I don't want to be one of the dead humans in the experiment. So if you do, I'll get after it. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review are political, hostile, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And our phone number is 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book, Genetic Roulette. That's Genetic Roulette. And it's put out by a guy named Jeffrey Smith. This is his second major book. He puts out some other stuff. When you get a copy of the book on the last page, you know, he wrote a book or a treatise here called You're Eating What? And Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals, GMO Trilogy, Seeds of Deception, and now Genetic Roulette. This guy has got a unique writing style. It's a style that's a little different than you've probably ever seen before. I kind of like it. It makes the whole book, see, for a reviewer like me, I really don't want to sit here and have to read 517 pages to find out a particular fact. And the way he's written this, he's got the headlines. For instance, over here we're in the soybean section. We've covered the tomatoes, we've covered the potatoes, and we went through the corn. Now we're into soybeans. And then a little later on, you know, he's got peas and beans and, you know, other things and other experiments. So it's arranged here in subject matter. And then on the left-hand page, he's got a headline. Here's the headline that says, GM food supplement killed about 100 people and caused 5 to 10,000 to fall sick. So you see the headline and say, God, that's kind of interesting. I'd like to know, well, who are these 100 people that died? Under what circumstances? Well, how did it happen? And what is the FDA doing about it? What's the government doing? Who's being sued for these 100 deaths? That immediately comes to my mind. Well, no, here's the sub-headlines. It says, one brand of supplement, L-tryptophan, created a deadly U.S. epidemic in the 1980s. The company genetically engineered bacteria to produce the supplement more economically. Their product contained many contaminants, 5 or 6 of which were suspected as the cause of the disease, and discovering the epidemic required multiple coincidences, suggesting that adverse reactions to GM foods may be hard to identify. Now, the impurities in Showa Dinko's genetically engineered tryptophan happened to cause an illness. It's called EMS, which was a very novel illness. The surge of numbers, therefore, stood out and got noticed. If Showa Dinko's poison had caused the same number of a common illness instead of, say, asthma, we would still not know about it. Or if it had caused delayed harm, such as cancer, 20 to 30 years later, we wouldn't know about it. Or senile dementia, and some whose mothers had taken it early in pregnancy, there would have been no way to attribute the harm to the cause. Now here's the story. The right-hand page, now here's the details. So let me give you the details here. In the 1980s, thousands of individuals in the United States contracted a disease that physicians could not at first identify. The symptoms varied by patient and it included swelling, coughs, rashes, physical weakness, pneumonia, breathing difficulties, hardening of the skin, mouth ulcers, nausea, shortness of breath, muscle spasms, visual problems, hair loss, difficulty with concentration or memory, and paralysis. The one symptom that was shared by all was intense, debilitating muscle pain. That's called myalgia. The patient's levels of white blood cells, called eosinophils, E-O-S-I-N-O-P-H-I-L-S, also skyrocketed, suggesting a severely disrupted immune system. So after several years, a series of coincidences allowed doctors to identify that an epidemic of a new disease was taking place and that all of the victims had consumed the food supplement L-tryptophan. Now, LT, as it's known as or called, LT is an essential amino acid found in turkey, milk, and other foods. This L-tryptophan is a precursor to the neurotransmitter serotonin and had been taken as a supplement for stress, insomnia, and depression. The disease was named eosinophilia myalgia syndrome, EMS, and it traces back, and traceback studies revealed that only one of the six LT brands imported into the United States caused this EMS. The brand contained five or six unique contaminants, one or more of which was likely to be the cause. The Japanese manufacturer Showa Denko had taken precautions against contaminants entering the production process. They were, however, the only company that had genetically engineered their bacteria to produce their L-tryptophan. And starting in 1984, as they progressively added more genes to their bacteria, there was a corresponding increase in the contamination levels. The final strain, which caused the most illness, contained five separate transgenes. Now let's pause here for a second. This product called L-tryptophan is an enzyme. It occurs in nature, and it's just as normal as toenails. No problem with it. In fact, it's a supplement. You go into the health food store, say, I want some L-tryptophan. They sell it to you, walk out the door. All right, this has been going on for years and years. All of a sudden, there's a disease comes up. People are getting terrible muscle pain. And they're getting these symptoms that I read to you over here. So they go to the doctor. Just like you or I or anybody else would. You know, you got this god-awful pain or you got this symptom. You said, God, I guess I better go to the doctor. Doctor looks at you and says, huh. He says, well, what are you eating? I'm eating the L-tryptophan. So the one single common denominator that everybody had was that they're all taking L-tryptophan. Now, here's the real anomaly, because many people out here are taking this L-tryptophan, and they don't get sick at all, but a lot of people that are getting sick or have these symptoms, every single one of them is taking L-tryptophan. So now the researchers, they get to look a little bit further, and they find a particular manufacturer. There are six manufacturers of this L-tryptophan that's being sold all over the United States. Millions of people are buying the product. Millions of people are fine. They're not having any problem. But of all of the people that are having these problems, these symptoms, they're all of them on L-tryptophan. And then they narrow it down and say, oh my God, it's all coming from this one manufacturer. And then we carry it out one step further. This is the only manufacturer out of the six that is using genetically modified bacteria to produce it. It's GM. All right, now, kids, we've taken a look at GM peas and GM tomatoes and GM potatoes and GM corn and canola and soy. I mean, I got all the, now let's take a look at GM L-tryptophan. Now, here's the story. Here's what happened. Here are the people. Here are the dead bodies that we can actually identify. And it came from genetic modification. Now, it's true, we can't say that, well, genetically modified corn, you can't say that that killed 100 people. Well, you can't say that genetically modified tomatoes killed anybody. Well, that's true. But we can sure as hell point to 100 dead bodies over here that were killed by genetically modified L-tryptophan. And L-tryptophan is a natural substance. Hell, it's a part of your digestive process, kids. But when we genetically modified the genes that produce the L-tryptophan, it caused death. Now, what does that say for genetic modification in general? By God, it should trigger in everybody, well, we better look a little more deeply into this, don't you think? Before we just run around here and GM modify everything and start eating it, maybe we ought to look into this a little more seriously. All right, now here's the next paragraph. There are several ways in which genetic engineering could have produced the contaminants. Unintended changes in the DNA might create unintended proteins or shift proportions of naturally occurring ones. Show a Denko's bacteria produced enzymes in higher than normal concentrations, which might interact in unpredictable ways to produce contaminants. In addition, if LT molecules were changed in structure or concentration, they might produce additional problems. For example, LT is toxic to the bacteria that create it. Thus, the bacteria might have modified the more concentrated LT, or itself, or the environment, as a means of self-preservation. And also, the LT is one of the inputs used by organisms to produce niacin. During this process, a number of intermediate substances are created, which help regulate immune system responses. An altered LT could, theoretically, produce a change in these immune regulators, causing significant disruption of the immune system. Now, several alternative explanations attempt to shift blame away from genetic engineering. Some are based on the misconception that the first GM strain of bacteria was introduced in December of 1988. Proponents argue that since some EMS cases had been contracted from LT manufactured prior to that date, there would have to be a cause other than just the mere engineering of the strains. Since four earlier GM strains had been used during the 4 years prior to December 1988, this theory is baseless. Similarly, some had blamed the epidemic on a change in the filter used at the factory to purify the LT, but the filter change occurred in January of 1989, years after EMS had been first contracted. And it is interesting to note that after being filtered, the LT was still more than 99.6% pure, passing U.S. pharmaceutical standards. The suspected toxins were present at less than 0.1% of the final product. And some, including the FDA, argued that LT itself was dangerous and responsible for EMS, according to epidemiologist Edwin Kilbourne, who investigated EMS while at the Center for Disease Control, the CDC. If this were true, then all L-tryptophan products of equal dose produced from different companies should have had the same effect, and they didn't. Kilbourne insists that no evidence supports this, and in fact, the EMS investigator William Christ revealed that in every single case where the organs of EMS-associated LT were identified, and Showa Denko was the source. EMS expert Gerald Glick says, tryptophan itself clearly is not the cause of EMS, in that individuals who consumed products from companies other than Showa Denko did not develop any EMS. The evidence points to Showa Denko and their product as the culprit and to the contaminants as the cause. So this then has a sobering lesson. Now, according to the CDC officials, the GM supplement killed about 100 people. It caused 5,000 to 10,000 others to fall sick or become disabled. There are still no special safeguards for GM-produced supplements. And if that same LT were first introduced today, it could get on the market. The epidemic took years to identify. It was discovered only because the disease was so rare, so acute, and it came on so quickly and had a unique source. If one of these four attributes were not present, the epidemic might have remained undiscovered. Similarly, if common GM food ingredients are creating adverse reactions, the problems and their source may go untreated. Now, it would be a good idea to take these GM products, label the cans, and then when you people get sick, you can go to the doctor. And then we would find, or we might find, that everybody has a least common denominator. They're all eating GM, that's genetically modified soy oil, or cottonseed oil, or. And then you could come to a definitive conclusion. Now, you can just about bet that this company went bankrupt. This Japanese outfit. and no other company wants to go bankrupt, and so they're going to do everything they can to prevent labeling so that nobody can ever figure out what their product is doing to other people. Now, here's an illustration. Fluoride has been in our water now for 50 or, I don't know, started in 44, I guess it was, here in the United States, back during World War II. So it's been around for 60 years. You can rest assured that fluoride is not coming out of your water. You know, once this stuff gets established, it's there forever. And it's well established that fluoride is a god-awful toxic poison. But when you take this toxic poison in small quantities, it doesn't kill you right away. And in fact, the fluoride never does kill you. It weakens your immune system and you die from something else. Very few people die from AIDS, dementia. And that's because when you get AIDS, you die from pneumonia or some other opportunistic disease before you can get to the stage where you die of AIDS, dementia. But that doesn't mean that if you get AIDS, you won't get dementia. Told you about the lady, you know, that had a radical mastectomy of both breasts. She had developed, or she had a history in her family of having cancer. And so, you know, her grandmother died from breast cancer and her mother died from breast cancer. And so she looked at it and said, well, then I think I should have a radical mastectomy right now so that I won't get breast cancer. Well, she's right. I mean, that's going to work every time. You know, if you cut off your head, you could eliminate brain tumors. Now, I don't know. It seemed like to me that there's a least common denominator. You know, people like to say, well, I'm genetically disposed to cancer. Well, maybe you're not genetically disposed to cancer. Maybe because you came from this family, you smoke, or maybe you drink, or maybe you eat the same foods that your grandmother ate and your mother ate, and these foods cause cancer, and you're eating the same foods, and you don't want to get breast cancer. Well, you won't ever get breast cancer because you cut off your breasts, lady. But don't you think that maybe a more logical solution might be something along the lines of, well, I came from a family that ate a lot of fat. Now, I'm a Gordon, and I can look back in the Gordon family. We came from the Pacific Northwest, and we ate a lot of unclean food, a lot of pork, a lot of fat. Every one of them chewed tobacco, smoked, drank heavily, chased girls. I mean, the Gordons are historically, looking back to about 1898 when my great-granddaddy died at age 48, I believe it was. And they all die from cardiovascular disease. They die from heart attack. Well, you see, we Gordons could say, well, what we need is a heart transplant. What we need is all of us Gordons to go in, have our hearts cut out, and have a Jarvik artificial heart put in so that we can avoid heart attack. Well, I guess that would make sense. Because we all die from heart attack. And so I guess I could say, well, you know, heart attack is just genetic. It's in the Gordons. And all the Gordons die from heart attack. My great-granddad did. My granddad did. Now, my father did not die from a heart attack. He died from a broken neck in an automobile accident. But they did an autopsy on him, and when they got through with the autopsy, they said, well, it didn't make any difference that he got killed in this car wreck because he was going to die in the next year or two from a cardiovascular disease. He was going to have a heart attack anyway. Now, I want to tell you, boys and girls, that I ate the same foods that my daddy ate because my daddy is the one that forced me to learn how to eat like the Gordons ate. And my daddy ate like his granddaddy ate, and my granddaddy ate like his daddy ate, and so on back down the line. Now, most of you people haven't connected the dots yet, but what you eat is what you are, and the family that eats cancer-producing foods is going to produce cancer, and families that eat heart attack producing foods are going to have heart attacks. So I'll tell you what I did. I took a look at this and I said, now I think I'll pass up the artificial heart. Now I think I'll pass up the heart transplant. Now I think I'll pass up the blood and the fat and the smoking and the drinking and the girls down at Flo's, and I'll lead a different lifestyle. Now I'm the longest living Gordon in five generations. Longest living. And I've still got my same heart, and the gene theory, I think, falls on its face, because I stopped eating fat. I stopped eating clams and mussels and oysters and crabs and unclean foods. I stopped smoking. And I would attribute my longevity to my diet and lifestyle. And so I'm sitting here saying, you know, if you want to take this L-tryptophan over here, we take it here to this day. L-tryptophan is a natural substance. It's a natural food. It's an enzyme. There's no problem with L-tryptophan. But what we've discovered here is L-tryptophan that is produced by genetic modification. Boy, now that stuff poses a problem. And they were able to document that. Now, I can extrapolate that one step further and say, well, if L-tryptophan, produced by genetic modification, produced death, there's a good possibility that genetic modification of corn, soybeans, canola, cotton, is going to produce the same death, same problems. Now, you know, we're smart enough to figure out that people that smoke have a higher risk of lung cancer than people that don't smoke. Well, you know, you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to figure out that, well, gee, if I didn't smoke at all, I might not prevent lung cancer, but I would have a lesser chance of contracting lung cancer. So I just carry that a step further, and I say, well, if I avoid all GM foods over here, I mean, I don't have to give up corn chips. I just have to give up genetically modified corn chips. You know, we eat corn chips here all the time. I mean, you know, we have cooking oil in our diet. You know, I can have cooking oil. I don't have to give up oil just because the soybean oil is bad for me when it's genetically modified. There is soybean oil out there in the marketplace that is not GM. There is cottonseed oil that is not GM. You know, you can get just about anything you want that is non-GM. My report to you is avoid genetic modified foods. That's the lesson that we get here. Now remember, this book is called Genetic Roulette. And the author is Jeffrey M. Smith. Well written, well documented. This is where the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence is recorded. I mean, this guy, I don't think he's a lawyer, but he hasn't failed in presenting his case. I mean, I could take this case into court and win, hands down. And I can prove my point based upon his research. And if you want to do that, you can get a copy. The price is $27.95. Remember, you can get it from Barnes & Noble, any bookstore, 2007, brand new book. And if you can't find it anywhere, well, then remember the BraveNewBookstore.com. BraveNewBookstore.com. All right, we're out of time, kids. We got to leave it right there. So let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hair time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.